For billets of price, big or small, at Brilliant Metals we have it all. Angles, flats, cement and doors, lumber, windows and much, much more.
Get all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form ply for boxing.
Big or small, at Brilliant Metals we have it all, at Brilliant Metals we have it all.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to Brass Tack Sunday. This is Sanka Price with you. On the line, we have Dr. Clyde Maskell, and he's the economic, Ambassador Dr. Clyde Maskell, and he's the Chief Economic Counselor to Prime Minister Mia Motley. Mr. Edward Clark, the Chairman of the Barbados Private Sector Association and the Co-Chair of the BERT Program Monitoring Committee. We also have on the line the leader of the Democratic Labour Party, Ms. Uvula DePisa. And of course, we are discussing the Barbados' COVID-19 recovery plan. It's a $2 billion plan, and we're examining whether it is workable, does it go far enough, and what more needs to be done to get it going. Before we go to the WhatsApp, I would like to play for you a clip from from Bishop Joseph Atherley. He is the leader of the opposition, and he could not make it to the show because he is engaged otherwise in, and but he sent us an audio clip on the concerns of the official opposition.
It is a further and very strong concern of the opposition that this fund is to be supported by a raid on the existing catastrophe fund. This especially so at the start of the hurricane season. We are very uneasy about this recourse to the catastrophe fund, despite the circumstances of the moment. The last administration, one would recall, was chided for a similar action.
And that was Bishop Joseph Atherley. He is, of course, talking about the near $50 million in the catastrophe fund that is going to be used to help capitalize for the unemployment benefits. Dr. Maskell, would you like to respond to this? Yes, Dr. Maskell.
In fact, I had the privilege of carrying the catastrophe fund to Parliament. But I think the official opposition leader is missing a point. When the catastrophe fund was established, and it is established for disasters, it contains only about $50 million. There was no debt restructuring that included a disaster clause. Now, let me explain this. If Barbados, and we hope not, has a hurricane of a particular magnitude, the disaster clauses are triggered within our debt in such a way that the government would be relieved of having to service debt for 2 years. That is saving or delaying payment on its interest as well as principal of debt. That will unleash about $1.7 billion for the Barbados government. So, Sanka, if you have such a provision, and you are now in a disaster of a different kind, an invisible disaster, to lean on $50 million in a catastrophe fund, knowing that you have that provision within your debt agreement, is really, if I may say so, a good thing to have at this time. Because $50 million in a serious disaster will do very little. But I repeat, any such disaster will cause us to trigger the clauses in our debt agreement. So, in essence, what the Prime Minister is saying, that I can use this because we now have something that backs us up and which is much, much larger. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And this is for Mr. Clark. This person is asking, can you please ask the head of the private sector if this period is a good time for entities to list on the Barbados Stock Exchange? to raise capital while allowing the public to benefit from the eventual rebound in business?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know if it's a good time to be out there raising new capital. It depends on what type of company you have. You know, I think a lot depends on what type of business you're talking about. That would drive the response from the general public. What sort of strategic plan, what sort of fiscal plan you have, package you have for a company. I don't think it is any and every company would be a good time to go on a stock exchange now to try to raise capital or put an IP or anything like that. It depends totally on what type of business, what type of company. And I think that's the best I can answer at this time. But right now is going to be a pretty difficult time to do that, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And this next one, before we go right back to the plan again, tourism will be back, but not in its current form. And we need to spend money to be ready for the new tourism product, which will be more specialized with unique offers. We should be spending money to be ready for the new tourism product, which will be more specialized and unique, with unique offers that will be what will be necessary. The plan that we have here, where we're going to see a resumption of Sam Lord's, the Crane and Apes Hill, as well as a commencement of the Hyatt Siva, is the same old, and this is the point that Miss DePisa was making. Are there going to be any unique aspects being brought to our concept of tourism since it's a new normal going forward?
You're asking me that one?
Well,
yeah,
go right ahead.
I would expect that if you have a new Hyatt Siva is a new concept, I think that what you're hearing is some other capital tourism projects that are coming on are different concepts. Mm-hmm. Even the Sagicor's investment thing is a new concept. But I do agree that the product, we need to make sure that we have a product that meets the trends and the demands of the new marketplace. And especially the younger clientele, they're more demanding. They expect a little different product from what we have been offering over the years. And I know the people in the tourism sector have been looking at various options. So I would expect any new investment coming in would be trying to offer something a little more refined, a little more specialized in certain areas to offer a different clientele. And I'm not sure about the Sam Lord's. I really don't know what the Sam Lord's concept will be. So I can't comment on that at this stage.
Mm-hmm. But you can comment about the Sagicor Retirement Village. I'm sorry, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but...
Yeah.
The fact is that it is one of the projects mentioned in this $1.08 billion of private infrastructure and construction due to restart.
Yes, I would say first of all, it's not the name is not the Sagicor Retirement Village, but the estate in George.
Thank you.
People seem to have the belief that it's a retirement village only. It's a whole new way of life. That project, we have the tenders in for that project. I'm talking from a Sagicor perspective right now. It is going to the board for review and approval in the near future, and that project should be ongoing. But that project is a residential campus, and also part of it catered living, and the longer term part is a skilled nursing concept. So it is a new way of tourism as well. We're hoping to attract the foreign clients as well that will be using those catered living and skilled nursing services. Very specialized, so there is investment in that way down the pipeline. That's not even included in the initial figure that is quoted here, some of that. So.
Okay. Mr. Pisa, would you like to add something before we move on to the part two of the plan?
I have a good few more questions in relation to part one of the plan.
Okay.
But I'm glad that you picked up on one of them, and that is that the projects, for the most part, that have been singled out for mention are projects under an old tourism model. And we haven't heard how they are planning to revamp for any potential change. I mean, the governor of the central bank put his finger on the pulse when he said that the world is going to be a different place after COVID, and we have to be mindful of that. For certain, Zoom has made sure that business travel is going to be substantially affected going forward, and that is just one module. We were already facing changes and challenges to traditional tourism by way of Airbnb. And I suspect that traditional models will continue to come under pressure. We have not developed tourism product in any meaningful way for decades. We have an aged tourism offering, and that too has to be taken into consideration. So it's not just about hotel plans, but in relation to, and I keep marrying the Prime Minister's pronouncement with the Governor of the Central Bank statement, and what jumped out for us was the acknowledgement, which I believe everybody somewhere in the recesses of their mind were aware, is that the foreign reserves have been shored up primarily, if not solely, by the IMF loan. And we just had to go back to IMF for space, which is expected given this external, unpredictable shock. But what that does is raise a lot of questions in terms of how, if the governor of the central bank is correct, that we are going to maintain the outside limit of 2033, how then is it that the government, by dropping from 6% to 1%, how do we then also keep pace with the 2033 goals, especially since one of those first goals in, I believe, 2023 is the restart of servicing of our domestic debt? And how does that also fit in with the proposed bond issue to finance the COVID environment?
Could I?
Yes, go ahead, Dr. Maskell. Yes.
First of all, there's so much work done in determining a private investment that I don't know who would question when a man decides to put millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in an investment. Who would question whether or not that person has looked at his model? And who are we to then determine whether or not private sector investment projects should go on? And do you not think, Sanka, that these individuals who are putting so much money in would have took into consideration these things? So I don't think we can question. We understand that prior to COVID, we were talking about remodeling, but the investor is making those decisions, not the government. Let me go on to say this. The COVID thing, the bond, let me explain how the bond works. The National Insurance Scheme holds debt for government in a bond. The National Insurance Scheme now wants cash to meet all of these obligations occasioned by COVID. There are almost 30,000 unemployment claims, so you need cash. The government is proposing, therefore, to prepay the bond at the NAS. When the government prepays that bond, it immediately lowers the debt, its debt profile, or the amount. You with me? When it issues the bond, when it issues a bond, it therefore brings it back to where it was. So nothing has happened except that you have resolved the issue of cash for the NAS. So that is not an issue where it would come from. The other thing is, you asked the question about the profile for the horizon, the 2033. Now, everything in this program is a ratio of GDP. So what will happen is that when GDP declines, as we expect now, that ratio goes up. Conversely, when the GDP increases, the ratio falls. And therefore, The reason why you need all of these investments, the reason why you need to return to economic activity, is that we are proposing that investment and all these changes now that we are coming to, we'll discuss later about manufacturing being reconfigured, we going back to agriculture in a major way, will become a major stimulus to the economy. Once that GDP grows faster than even the government has planned for in the program, it means that we can recover after this little blip in the road. You with me? The bump in the road, sorry. So therefore, we are proposing that improving the investment condition now, improving our capacity to grow the economy, will cause us over a 15-year period or 13-year period from now to be able to accelerate growth going forward. So in life, this is a challenge, but it's also an opportunity. And we will see when we discuss the other parts of the program how we can possibly trigger even greater economic growth after this COVID period.
All right.
Fair, but what hasn't been answered, though, Sanka, is who does the pandemic solidarity bond issue target?
Oh, it targets everybody. Once you have money, you have some money that you can invest in it. They'd be happy. There's no discrimination. You put a bond in the market for people who have resources to buy.
And is this reasonable given what has happened to government bonds in recent times?
What has happened to government bonds?
Is it still seen as a safe investment?
They're fully recovered and appreciated and trading much higher, even internationally. So all that's happened is that there has been a restoration of confidence in the Barbados economy. And don't believe for any time that there are not entities in Barbados which still have liquidity to invest in bonds. Don't ever believe it. The world doesn't function that way. We're not all equal. And because we're not, right, we work on distributing resources as we see fit in policy making. So therefore, there are people and entities who may very well find a new issue of a bond very, very exciting. And time will prove that.
All right, let's move on here. We try to take some calls first and then be moving to the plan. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, turn your radio. Yes, good morning. But turn your radio down in the background, please.
Okay.
Just listen to your telephone. All right?
How is that?
Good. Go right ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Mr. Price. How are you doing?
I'm well.
And good morning to your panel. The
good morning.
Earlier during your comment, when you spoke to the private sector head, he referred to the current situation as a hiccup in our along our path, and I really want to differ with him on that. I can't categorize it as a hiccup, because a hiccup will pass quickly. You take a little water and you get rid of it, or so you hold your breath and that's it. However, in this regard, there's some questions that I'd like to ask relative to how we are going to address our recovery, and probably to the goodly professor, Mr. Maskell. Maybe he can give us an indication as to if there's a revised period for our recovery, given the current environment and the current situation that is facing us at this point in time, and would he be willing to share that revised period?
Dr. Maskell, did you hear the question?
I would wish to be God. I would wish to be God, but it would be impossible for me to be. And you know something? There's no God on earth. So there's no one that can come and safely tell you when is the end of this. What we therefore have to do is to plan for it in phase way. Phase one, and then you hope. Phase two, and then you have more hope. Because this thing called COVID has affected that thing that allows us to link countries to countries, that allows us to link homes to workplaces, called transport. And therefore, no one can know when we will return. But it does not stop you from planning. And therefore, what we are saying, given our best view of the world as we stand now, we are hoping so-and-so will happen, and assumptions have been made. But to give you clarity, And to tell you that on the November the 30th, that planes will once again be in the air, will for me to be assuming status that I never even pretend to assume. I will not dream ever to assume.
All right, sir. And you want a follow-up question? All right. We go to the next call. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Go right ahead with your question.
Yeah, but before I raise my question, I want to very quickly respond to a comment of Ambassador Maskell, and that has to do with the attractiveness of government paper, the government bonds to which he spoke. I personally wish the government well with that, but as somebody of pensionable age now, who got burnt by the last year, I cannot tell you that while, as I said, I wish the government well, I personally have no appetite at this stage of my life for that, because I grew up over the last 4 decades when I invested in government paper, believing in the safety of that and so on. But that's not the point. I want to move a little bit away from the focus on the package in relation to capital works. And this is a question to Senator Dr. Maskell and Mr. Clark. I've been trying to follow the discussion, and I want to ask a couple of things, or at least to get a better understanding. I heard Senator Maskell said that he's in...
He's not Senator Maskell anymore.
Ambassador, Dr. Clyde Maskell, let me do it that way. And if he would permit me, I might call him Clyde, but I would not be presumptuous.
Clyde is right.
To get a better understanding, because I'm trying to get a holistic picture of how we go forward as a country and what government is going to do. So far you've been talking about a stimulus package, as I say, focus on capital works. But I want to look more at the immediate short term, and I want to understand the situation, because this obviously is part of the total equation. I want to understand the situation, really, the meeting of ongoing government expenditures in the immediate future. I'm talking there about transfers to statutory corporations to pay salaries, payments to public servants, pensions, rents to government offices, utility bills, etc. And to help me understand, I think I would want you to tell me what has been the approach to meeting this these expenditures by government in the last 20 months. I think I understood what was said, but I would prefer if you explain that to me, and then I would pose the question that I want to pose. Been meeting its expenditures in the past 20 months in terms of meeting its salary bill, its bills for salaries, etc.
Now, at the end of March, the government realized a surplus of 6.04% of GDP. Translated to mean that government, when it took into consideration all of its expenditure, including capital, and not the, the interest component, that it had a surplus. So in this environment, government was actually putting, was actually taking more money out of the economy than it was putting in. And this is predominantly because of the interest rate expense on the current account being reduced so substantially. And then they had some other minor adjustments to wages and salaries, goods and services like and transfers. So the government was safely covering all of its expenses to the extent that it had surplus, which it then used to bring down the debt. In this environment now, post March 31st, the government target, in short, has declined to 1% of GDP, which therefore means that the government now has room of about $500 million that it no longer has to treat as a surplus, but can now utilize either by way one of the fact that it's going to lose revenue in this environment, and it will still have an opportunity to spend a little something.
Okay, let me ask a question there, because
so therefore, the government...
Let me finish the point, then.
all of his expenditure without having to go and borrow. In fact, what I'm saying to you, government was actually putting money in the economy because of the surplus. You with me?
Yeah, but can I ask a question now? Because, you see, I also think I know. I'm not an economist, but I understand a little bit about accounting. And one of the things that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, while you're saying all of those are things on the books and you're talking about set aside money, one of the concerns that I heard raised, and this is why I wanted an explanation so I can ask some questions, at any time in the last 20 months, first of all, let me ask the question, does all that you say translate into cash that is readily available to government to meet those monthly and daily expenses? Does it translate into cash flow? Because the question I want to raise is prior to all that it had to do to prepare for this pandemic in terms of allocating money for health purposes and doing all the things that Barbados has had to do. Prior to that, at any time in the 20 months, did government find itself challenged to meet its day-to-day expenses, notwithstanding all of what you just described?
Not be challenged, not in this environment.
So you're telling me, okay, so let me say then, categorically you're saying to me that I'm talking about going forward, going back to come forward, that in the last 20 months, there was no time that the government would have had to scratch its head to find cash and to pay its local bills. I'm not talking about...
I want to add some context before Ambassador Maskell answers as well.
Oh, okay. I'm having a little difficulty hearing because I was hearing two people. I think I just heard Ms. DePisa say something.
Yes. When you're finished, before Ambassador Maskell responds, I want to put some context as well so that when he is answering, he answers both of us.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. At page 14 of the Central Bank of Barbados's report, which was delivered just a few days ago, the governor spoke about our revenues being $9 million below our previous year and $75 million below target. It was due to reduced inflows from the shift of budget for statutory corporations, decline in corporation taxes, shortfall in new tourism-related taxes, lower collection of personal income tax, restructured bonds, and I'm just mentioning a few, and elimination of certain taxes re non-residents.
So having
all of that, and then with the caller's question, I await the answer.
So before Ambassador Maskell answers, having heard all of that, because from what I am hearing Ms. DePisa just read, you're talking about a reduction in government revenues prior to March. We've just gone through a full month, essentially, of this. The outlook is not good. My question, again, remains within that context, that where there was clear evidence, because I didn't even have that information in front of me. I didn't even have it because I didn't hear the report of the governor, sorry. But having heard that and having recognized that clearly there was a decline, and you're telling me that government never had any challenges meeting those expenses, and you're
telling me,
this is what I want for confirmation for me and the public. You're telling me.
And you,
finish making the point so you can answer, and then I can give you all the time in the world to think. So you're saying basically there were no challenges in terms of cash, that even in the face of reduced revenues from corporate taxes, et cetera, et cetera, there were no problems, and you do not anticipate that, let's say, in the next quarter, May, June, July, if you use these next 3 months, that we will have
things,
meeting those expenses.
Y'all, the young ladies are good politicians. You asked me about March. You asked me about March, and now you're projecting. So let me
I said I want to go back to come forward. It's very early, sir. that very early. I am very clear to what I want to say and what I'm asking.
So let me answer you.
Yes. Now, in the IMF program, we sit down every day and we try to project our revenue. Revenue is certain. The Prime Minister says maternal. You know that you're going to have it. You're certain about it. So when we make a projection at the start of the fiscal year about the corporate tax rate, the income tax we get, the VAT, the excise, what we're doing every day is looking to see what the actual performance is in relation to that. What you would have heard from the central bank governor is that the target that was set was not met. So there was a shortfall of about $9 million. But that is wonderful forecasting. Any government that could sit down and forecast that of a figure of 300 or something million in corporate tax that it fell short by 9 million would have done wonderful forecasting. So when you hear the shortfall, it is in relation to the target. Now, the fact that that target was not met does not disturb you on the expenditure side, because in similar vein, you're managing your expenditure. And the expenditure that you're most capable of managing is called capital expenditure, because it is discretionary. So when the government pays its wages and salaries without any effort because it has good revenue, when it meets its goods and services without any effort because it has good revenue, when it transfers money to these statutory corporations and things because it has good revenue, and when it meets its reduced interest payments on the current account, then it could always say, because I want to meet a certain target, I could slow down my capital works program to allow me to come within the established target at the beginning of the year.
Could I make a final comment?
Hold on. You can't ask a question and then determine how long it takes. I am saying to you, therefore, that there was never an issue with any cash. And then the politician now decides that, having answered that, what will the future look like? Now, the future is a completely different set of circumstances in which now we have already determined that our revenue will be compromised because of COVID-19. So when you ask me the next question, I will answer whatever else you have to ask.
But before she asks your question, Ms. McLean, just hold on. Before you ask the question, we just need to remind the public that this program is brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries, Inc.
You do not have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet will rust where it is joined. That is one reason why the beautiful Permaclad U-Panel and R-Panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. Permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joints from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices, delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas 425-2000 or Lowlands Christ Church 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to Brass Stack Sunday. This is Sankey Price with you along with Dennis Johnson.